Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin, the opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin.
Don't wait for an organization to go in for the grant and then wait to be interviewed. Go to the HOG site, read through the peer policy fellow application and the criteria. Reimagine, be creative, imagine for yourself what it is you want that role to look like, and find a nonprofit that you have a relationship with. Let them know how this builds out their capacity as well as yours. That's what I want every directly impacted person to know.
Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, the mental health podcast. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and today we're delighted to bring you episode 127, Lessons Learned on Public Policy. When you ask, virtually everyone agrees that public policy matters. And yet, meaningful involvement in policy work is a challenge for many. And mental health policy is no exception. For many groups and individuals, their ability to engage in mental health policy is constrained by time, budget, and lack of expertise. To help address this, in 2010, the HOG Foundation launched the Policy Academy and Fellows Program to increase individuals' and organizations' capacity and expertise to advance mental health policy in Texas, while also increasing the consumer voice in policy development and implementation. Last year, we celebrated the 10th year. In 2020, we celebrated the 10th year of this cornerstone initiative, which is still going strong with a fresh cohort of policy fellows. HOG policy fellows have gone on to positions of leadership at all levels, and their collective expertise has changed mental health policy in Texas for the better. Later this month, the HOG Foundation will be releasing a report titled HOG Foundation for Mental Health Policy Academy and Policy Fellow Initiative, a retrospective on a decade of investment. In it, we do our best to summarize the impact of this initiative, but today we can do one better by bringing onto the show two people who have their hands all over the initiative and can each provide a unique perspective on what the initiative means to their work and to the people of Texas. So please welcome David Johnson, criminal justice organizer for Grassroots Leadership of Texas and an alum of the Policy Fellows Program, and our own Colleen Horton, director of policy for the HOG Foundation. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Ike.
Thank you.
So my first question is for David, pure and simple. Can you tell us about your experience as a policy fellow and the impact that it has had on your career and your life?
Yes. Simply put, my career, the career that I have today, began with my fellowship. I stumbled upon a position that was posted with Grassroots Leadership, an org that at the time had secured a fellowship grant from the HOG. And it was unlike any posting I had ever seen before. And that one moment changed my life. And it is because of that that I'm a policy wonk and research person today. Simply put, the experience changed my life.
Okay, so Colleen, I know the Fellows Program is a long-standing success for the foundation. The podcast itself is a testament to that because we've had so many policy fellows on the podcast. And you've been involved with it from the beginning. So could you maybe give us a little bit of the history, how it started, and what was felt to be the need for it?
Sure. I'd love to talk about the Policy Fellows Program because it's really, in my decades of working, one of the top three projects that I've worked on. It just really has been an incredible experience. And I'd love to hear what that had said that you responded to, David, but we'll save that. When I came to the foundation 12 years ago, there was a policy fellow here at the foundation, Sarah Kidder, that some folks may remember, and she was awesome. And she worked on major policy issues and worked on our grant programs and just was an incredible asset to the foundation and the policy team. And so we started thinking about it and thought, you know, if it's such a benefit to the Hogg Foundation, think of what it could do to help nonprofits and help them build their policy capacity out in the community. And so we started putting plans together and came up with the original program, which included five what we call traditional policy fellows that were graduates of graduate school, like law school or public policy or social work or psychology, that kind of thing. And they came on for 2 years. And our goal was really to make sure that they had a real comprehensive policy experience. So everything from working with the legislature and engaging with the agencies and doing policy research and analysis and you know, learning how to write policy documents, the whole thing. And so we put together a 2-year program and we awarded 5 grants and they funded the policy fellows' salary, their benefits. It included a mentor stipend and a professional development stipend because we wanted to make sure they had opportunities to really grow during that 2-year fellowship. And so the idea was not just to build capacity within the organizations, but also to give individuals an opportunity to open that door to policy because there aren't a whole lot of you know, ground level policy wonk type positions. So it really provided an opportunity to build capacity for individuals and organizations.
Okay. So, so talking about people with lived experience, those two separate tracks, there's the policy fellows in its original incarnation and then the peer policy fellows, that came to being, you know, sometime later. So David, one question that I've got is like, what is it that you thought when you first, you know, heard about a position like this that actually, you know, valued lived experience, with mental illness, substance use, incarceration, and being able to bring those aspects of yourself, into your work?
I hope anyone you listening to this, the minute he said lived experience, you knew it was coming to me. So,
yeah.
I can begin my answer by answering your question, Colleen. Colleen asked about the posting from grassroots leadership. I don't remember it verbatim, but one item in required skills or experiences was justice involvement or former incarceration. The next was personal experience. It was like personal experience with justice involvement or with incarceration. The second was personal experience with psychiatric hospitalization. And then there was a parenthetical addition that said inpatient substance use treatment would match as well. I saw those three things and I thought, oh hell, I hit the trifecta because you know, if you had thrown and we're looking for someone with sex trauma in their life, I would have just been, oh heck, it's the quadruple. I can retire, because very rarely do you find a job posting that specifically names as required characteristics the things that you try to hide from the world. Ever since my first incarceration, and truly ever since my first felony conviction, I, prior to the Hogg, had been running through life trying to get people to not care about my background. or to dazzle them so thoroughly with my performance or my accomplishment that they never thought to look. And this was the first time that I saw a job posting that basically said, hey, bring all your cracks. And not only are we not going to hold them against you, that's why we're hiring you. And I reached out to the org, the people I knew, and because my wife, Kyle, was already a member of Texas Advocates for Justice. And that's a project at Grassroots Leadership. And so, you know, called people and ended up getting an email and sent my resume in and had an interview. And this occurred at a time when I was working at one software company in town, and I was in the middle of, I'd just been given a second interview. And by the time they offered me the job at Grassroots, I'd received an offer from this other software company. And so I had to make this decision whether or not I was going to take more money at the software company or take less money, but in a role that was unlike anything I'd ever had an opportunity to do, unlike anything I'd ever known existed, and to get paid to learn. So when you throw in the fact that it tied in all my passions and the things that I've gone through, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, so Colleen, I was just thinking, like, was it always the intention that there would be a peer policy fellows version of this program, or did the understanding that this was something that could be beneficial, was it kind of later on in coming? And just curious about kind of the evolution of that.
It was an evolution, and I'll have to say that adding the peer policy fellows was one of the best things we've ever done. And basically, we never thought about it early on, even though we had two peer and family liaisons here at the foundation. You know, it wasn't really anything we thought about because our fellows had always been graduates of graduate school. But when we started the Policy Fellow Program, we had the Policy Academy alongside of it. And Noah Abdenauer was the director of policy or peer services at the Austin State Hospital. And I asked him to attend some of the Policy Academy meetings with some of his peer specialists just so that the fellows could get, hear from people with lived experience, you know, how the policies they were making would affect people on the ground, people in everyday life. And so over the year or next couple of years, Noah and I became pretty good friends, and we were talking one day and he said, we need peer policy fellows. And so we made it happen. We changed our request for proposal from requiring postgraduates and letting lived experience substitute for education. And we now have five what we call traditional fellows and five peer policy fellows with lived experience. But in the program, they're all, it's all equal. It's just a matter of how you meet the qualifications to get the job.
Okay, so David, I mean, having just spoken to, you know, what it felt like, you know, to be allowed to be yourself, going to that next level of, you know, your lived experience adding value to the program and to the mental health policy arena. And being able to, you know, to then think of yourself as, well, I mean, if we have our way, a sought after expert on these issues, maybe you can kind of speak to that a little bit and come up with some like concrete ways that your lived experience has made the work better for everyone else doing it.
Well, and first, shout out to Noah Abdenauer, shout out to Katie Mitten, shout out to Josette Saxton, you know, Zed, shout out to Colleen, because and shout out to Dr. Y'all call him Dr. M, but I call him Dr. Yeah. O, like Dr. J, you know what I'm saying? because I just wanted to thank them because they all played such a pivotal part in our collective experience, at least for my cohort. The greatest cohort ever at the Hog. But concrete ways. So first off, I want to name that I enjoy and enjoyed as a cohort a certain privilege through the org that I worked for to be myself that not everyone necessarily enjoys. Because a lot of times an individual may come with their lived experience to an organization that values their lived experience, but they still don't necessarily get to be 100% themselves because you have to, you're working for the org and it's not you as an individual. And so I have a unique perspective from that. But me coming in and being myself and how that's impacted the work, well, first off, I call out the gaps because people in the margins have had a lot of time to figure out what's wrong with the system that benefit those in the mainstream. If you want to talk about concrete example of policy, all of the work participating in all of the legislative work around different sentence limitations, decriminalization of drugs, clean slate, second look. They're trying to abolish slavery. There's so many state policy efforts that are pushed directly by the testimony of individuals with lived experience, right? However, very rarely, at least 5 years ago, 4 years ago, very rarely were those individuals included as part of the decision-making process or part of the planning process around strategy. And as a result, you had this top-down strategy that would usually come into place and would fall flat because it wasn't informed by what reality looks like. It was informed by theory. And that is something that the HOG Fellowship completely throws on its head, because you have a lot of individuals who have master's degrees but have never stuck a needle in their arm, smoked a crack pipe, have never sold themselves, have never been to jail, have never been homeless. And when they are put into a safe space with brilliant individuals with lived experience, they find all the things that are wrong with what they've been taught, all the things that are wrong with the systems that they are working to support or to undo, depending on where they work. And so I think the most concrete impact that my lived experience has had has been to save a lot of time by telling people, no, that's not the way it needs to be done, because that's why we have the problem that we have today.
And that's so true, because it's not just a lesson that the peer fellows taught the traditional policy fellows. It's a lesson that's been taught to mental health and substance use advocates, across the state, because a lot of time the professionals go in and they think their knowledge is enough to create good strategies, good solutions. And what they were able to see that is, if you don't listen to the people who are impacted by the solutions, that you're often going to get it wrong. You're not going to get it right. And it's been an incredible experience to, see all the fellows in action. Sometimes we're at the Capitol and there's a table with a panel of people ready to testify to a committee. And there are four or five people at the table. And every one of them is either a current fellow or a prior fellow or a mentor of a fellow. And it's just amazing to see, the expansive impact that the program has had throughout the policy arena.
I would also offer the relationship our lived experience, both as individuals and collectively, how that supports the organizing that is always needed in order to push any policy changes or block undesired policy changes. Traditionally, what would happen in the halls of power would be that organizations trying to work policy would have visits with offices and would parade out certain individuals whenever it benefited them, but they had no true relationships with those directly impacted communities to allow them to bring the numbers to testify, to bring the people who are willing to appear, because those things do matter.
So in addition to the policy fellows, another key piece of this initiative, groundbreaking in its own way, is the Policy Academy. And so Colleen, could you tell us, describe for us what it is, first of all, and how it was decided that this should be a component of the initiative?
Well, when we first started the Policy Fellow program, we wanted to ensure that the Policy Fellows had really a meaningful experience in those 2 years, that they really left the 2 years with some expertise and some real knowledge. So we decided to create the Policy Academy to run, side by side with the Policy Fellows program. And Texans Care for Children has been the grantee that's facilitated the Academy since the beginning of the program. But basically, the goal is to ensure that all the fellows and the mentor grantee organizations have some real opportunities for professional development in mental health and substance use policy, and both the issues themselves, but also in the policy process, you know, the legislature, how that operates, how the budget is developed, how rules are made at the agency, that kind of thing. So the Academy has been in existence from the beginning, and it's been a vital component. It doesn't mean that the grantee organizations that hire the policy fellows aren't responsible for the normal professional development and education, but it's just was a way to really enhance that two-year fellowship to make sure that the fellows left with a high level of expertise.
That takes me back to, I remember Catherine, brilliant woman, Ligon.
Yeah.
Catherine, and came and gave us this is what the ledge looks like. And I walked away thinking, that is the most confusing, labyrinthine thing I've ever seen. I'm never going to understand it. And recently I was redesigning a similar thing for our own purposes. And oh yeah, and this is where that's the third hearing. So I think about that all the time.
Yeah, that from where the fellows are when they come in to where they are when they leave in 2 years is just a remarkable difference.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that always stands out to me whenever I have the time to sit down and examine any aspect of the Policy Fellows program, just so that I can be sure of what I'm saying about it in my role in communications, is there really does seem to be a very strong kind of group identity that I think is part of the conscious intention. We want these people to all, you know, feel as if whatever individual challenges they may be experiencing in their jobs, you know, that they're a part of a common enterprise.
It's been one of the really remarkable things to see, and I think David can really attest to this because it was especially true in his cohort. But the fellows, all of them, you know, really bond, really support each other. They work on projects together. They collaborate. They go bowling. They do a lot of things together, and they become real professional colleagues, but also good friends. And I think, you know, there are times in this kind of work, especially during legislative sessions, that things can get pretty frustrating. And if you don't have that kind of support and friendship, you know, along the way with you, it's really not going to be a fun job. But when you have those people who love what they're doing and are doing it for the right reasons and the same reasons as you are, to help hold you up, it's just really an incredible group of influential people.
Okay, David, so this is your opportunity to maybe peacock a little bit about your 2 years as a fellow and just some personal highlights that you can recollect. And then to tell our listeners a little bit about where, you know, what you've been up to since your fellowship came to an end and things that you've had going on.
Okay. So my 2 years were wild and they were amazing. Highlights for me, one time there was an individual who I will not name, but anyone who was around knows who it was. And I'm from the south side of Chicago. A bully is a bully. And there are bullies in the ledge. There are bullies in policy work. And someone I recognize had a tendency to bully. Now, in my authenticity, I am known to, when apropos, let loose with some provocative phrases. However, I was new in the work And very much within white supremacist culture, there is a value on propriety in speech. So the minute I would say certain things, certain individuals took that as like this code that I could then be tuned out. One of my high points were not around like testifying and things in the ledge. My high point was around cutting someone's nonsense argument down and calling them out without dropping one bomb so that they scurried away and ran off to the grill to have a fake meeting. That was a high point for me, because for a black man who's been to prison 3 times and has struggled with substance misuse and misdiagnosed and misaddressed behavioral health issues, to come into that place and push back on a bully and have that bully turn, that was a high point for me. A high point for me was being honored. I mean, it was a few letters, but my name is in a house resolution for an honor of second chance for individuals. And while I have my own personal feelings around language like second chance and everything, that was still an honor. My wife shared that picture. That was 5 years. That was a picture from, you know, 3 years ago or so. And she shared that picture recently. And I thought with one of my fellow cohorts from the cohort, Carl Hunter, he was in it with us. That was a high point. High points for me were not learning how to read and decipher statute. That's easy once you learn what the words mean. It was not about figuring out how to find rooms in the Capitol, because that's difficult in and of itself, right? It was not knowing which line to get into at the grill to get the goods. No, the things that I remember are around personal moments where connections were developed. The high points for me were going to DC with the entire cohort, and not only hearing a lot of information, right, at SAMHSA, and some of it being useful, but hearing a lot of information and having access to it, because the access is the benefit. It isn't all the information, it's the access to it that I've never had and that our communities have never had. So when we went there and we met with different thought leaders, and then at the same time, some of us went to the theater together. Some of us went and did karaoke. That was an entire experience. That's an identity I had never known. I'd never known going on a business trip where the point of the trip was to learn and to heal and grow.
David's referring to the part of the academy that has really been fun to see evolve over the years, but it's a federal immersion program where the foundation takes all the fellows and their mentors from the organizations to DC for a week. And we have a gentleman, Noel Mazaid, who sets up meetings at the major mental health organizations and
NIH
and
SAMHSA, CMS.
Yeah. And you know, we have people from advocacy organizations like Bazelon come in, and it's an incredible mix of really high-level Washington, D.C. policy wonks that come and visit. And it's a fun week for the fellows, and where a lot of the real bonding takes place, I think.
And it's empowering, because let me tell you, there is no denser, more apocryphal policy writing than federal health. And so, or maybe tax code. And so when you throw this at a bunch of people and you see individuals with MSWs or MPHs, and they are looking at it saying, oh God, I hate reading this. This is difficult. And then an individual like myself who, you know, I transferred from the University of Houston to the University of Dope Dealing. And so I just haven't gone back and I'm about to do that. I'm about to go back and get my degree. However, at that time, for a person who didn't have a degree or who currently doesn't have a degree to be told, wow, you get this better than I do, that's some empowering stuff. Because then if you can understand federal statute, oh, you can understand anything.
So, Colleen, kind of a version of the same question, personal highlights for you over your time with this initiative, and I guess also snags or challenges that had to be negotiated along the way, perhaps.
I think the real high points are just watching these fellows soar. I mean, it's just been incredible to see where not just the 2 years, what happens during that 2 year fellowship, but what happens afterwards. We have fellows at state agencies and the Texas legislature, in nonprofits, in some of the professional associations. And it's just, you know, so heartwarming to see them soar and you know, hold on to that passion for the work that they're doing. You know, I was thinking about what some of the challenges have been, and there really haven't been a lot of challenges. There's been, you know, the normal stumbling blocks that when you hire somebody, if it's not a perfect fit, some of our grantees have hired fellows and it wasn't the best fit, and the fellow may have decided this wasn't the kind of work they wanted to do, so, you know, you have to go back and start over again. But that's just normal operations of business. That happens to all of us, you know, in our workspace. But most of the growth of the program over 12 years has been pretty smooth, and it's just been a joy to watch. It's been good to work with Texans Care for Children, and I think they've done an excellent job with the academy and really supporting the fellows and the mentor organizations along the way. And just seeing the success of the people who come into the program and seeing the people take the opportunity and not just see it as a 2-year job, but as David has talked about, see it as, you know, the beginning of the formation of a lifetime career. And it's just really been awesome.
No, yeah, you... mind if I? Oh, I didn't want to cut you off, Colleen. Sorry. I think about it, and at a time right now where things at the state level are what they are, you know, I'm so happy to have this experience because of how it informs my work locally. You know, I'm outside of the fellowship, but currently my local work through grassroots leadership around what the city should do with regard to what public safety looks like, what the county should do with regard to how it uses funds in response to overdose and substance misuse and behavioral health. Those things, you know, local government, local policy affects our lives more than state or federal. And so to know that while the session is out, there are things that I can be doing. There are opportunities to apply the experience gained from this work with the HOG to immediate things. That's one of the most rewarding things about this experience is I get to bring that to the local stuff today when the session isn't in.
Okay, so Colleen, hoping that you'd be willing to close us out. So we have a new funding opportunity for what, you know, we're sure will be just a wonderful new crop of Policy Fellows grantees. And then also the retrospective report that I mentioned in my intro. If you could just say some things about both of those things, and particularly with regard to the RFP, you know, who should be interested in taking a look at that?
Yes, we've talked about, the fellowships are 2-year fellowships, and so we're in the process of releasing the requests for proposals for the next cohort, and the next cohort of fellows will begin on July 1st of 2022. So the RFPs are going out January 31st, and there'll be two RFPs, and one will be for the traditional fellows, one will be for the peer fellows. But organizations can apply for one or both. And, you know, the organizations that are eligible to apply are nonprofits, governmental entities, universities, that kind of thing. So anybody who's interested in expanding their capacity to be able to do mental health policy within their organization, and it does not have to be a mental health organization or a substance use organization. It just needs to be an organization where mental health policy or substance use policy fits with the mission. And if the resources provided by the HOG Foundation can help them expand their ability to do that kind of policy work, then we encourage them to apply. And the retrospective report is one that Dr. Martinez wanted to have so that it really looks back at the history of the Policy Fellow Program and the Academy Program and gives as much information as possible to enable maybe other funders to take a look at it in other states and see if they want to replicate the program in other states. But it provides pretty comprehensive background and information, but also talks about, you know, some of the changes along the way and some of the things we needed to do to make the program a success. And I think that will probably be published in the next couple of months.
Okay, so on a note of shameless self-promotion, if you're interested in mental health policy in this kind of a format, our podcast, I would have to say, is about as good as you can find, even comparing us to KUT, Texas Tribune. And that's in large measure because of just the, you know, the amazing content that I'm able to siphon off for the podcast, thanks to our policy fellows, all the work that they do, the things that they give to us to talk about, Colleen and our policy unit here at HOG. And so I'm always very grateful to have any opportunity to reacquaint our listeners with this important piece of our work, and then the work that the fellows themselves are doing out there in the world. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to our listeners today.
It's been a pleasure, and always a pleasure to be with David.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Colleen. Can I add one thing?
Absolutely.
This is not to the orgs who are interested in the RFP. This is for the individual with lived experience. I lucked out. It was a blessing. Somehow I stumbled onto a posting for a position like this. But if I knew then what I know now, I would have looked for an organization willing to create the position that I want to create in accordance with this grant. So you know what? Don't wait for an organization to go in for the grant and then wait to be interviewed. Go to the HOG site, read through the peer policy fellow application and the criteria. Reimagine, be creative, imagine for yourself what it is you want that role to look like, and find a nonprofit that you have a relationship with. Let them know how this builds out their capacity as well as yours. That's what I want every directly impacted person to know.
As I mentioned earlier, the HOG Foundation will soon be releasing a special report about the Policy Academy and Policy Fellows Initiative. True to her title, our Strategic Learning and Evaluation Officer, Emily Bhandari, led the creation of this report and will be doing everything in her considerable power to ensure that its findings reverberate throughout the foundation and beyond. She's managed to take some time out of her busy schedule to share some thoughts about this report and why you shouldn't hesitate to check it out when it becomes available. Take it away, Emily.
Hi, my name is Emily Bhandari, and I serve as the Strategic Learning and Evaluation Program Officer at the HOG Foundation for Mental Health. We all know that public policy shapes the way neighborhoods are built and resources are allocated. Policy processes determine an individual's access to quality medical care, good schools, healthy food, reliable transportation, and a living wage. Ensuring that these systems and rules and policies that govern us are equitable is key to building healthy communities and resilient people. And so in 2010, the foundation launched the HOG Foundation for Mental Health Policy Academy and Policy Fellow Initiative with the goal of bolstering the mental health and substance use policy workforce to make long-term systems change. The program is quite unique, and over the past 10 years, staff have sharpened their understanding of the distinct elements that contribute to its success. But we wondered, after a decade of investment, what lessons were learned over time And in what ways is the initiative making an impact? Throughout the evaluation process, respondents shared a variety of ways that the Policy Fellow program meaningfully impacted their lives. Alumni remarked that the program increased their confidence in their ability to affect change and improve their knowledge and skills needed to engage in the policymaking process. The program has succeeded in significantly expanding the pool of knowledgeable and skilled advocates, increased organizational capacity for policy engagement, and strengthened relationships between stakeholders in the field. One policy alumnus said, "The fellowship in the Policy Academy had given me the confidence I lacked as a person with lived experience to be able to sit with individuals with degrees and decades of professional experience and know that my voice matters. My ideas and experiences matter when it comes to finding solutions that work."
The scheduled publication date for the report is February 23rd. On that day, you'll be able to find it on the Hawk Foundation website, or if you hurry up and subscribe to our Mental Health Headlines or Hog News emails, where the report will be featured and linked to in those as well. One of the pleasures and challenges of this podcast has been trying to convey to you, dear listener, why public policy and not just politics matters. Political discourse and political rhetoric is fun and invigorating, but we have tried to help people understand what the human stakes are for having a core of talented professionals who are willing to do the hard work of actually trying to get things done in a challenging environment where it's inevitable that you find yourself making arguments and appeals to people who see things very differently. The many episodes we've done on public policy amount to a trove of insights and lessons on a subject that, let's be honest, can be hard to make sexy. I went back through our archive and selected these episode callbacks for their unique pearls of wisdom. Let's start with one from episode 75, my conversation with Shannon Hoffman, Hawk Foundation policy specialist, about the challenges of substance use policy.
I think as individuals learn more about and become familiar with a public health approach to substance use, they're more inclined to be open to the solutions and ideas that not only aim to treat individuals with humanity and empathy, even if they are using substances, but in turn, it can make their communities safer and healthier.
Episode 79 was titled Maternal Mental Health, Where Family Well-Being Begins. In it, we had the pleasure of talking to Adriana Kohler of Texans Care for Children about the connection between the mental health of moms and their kids.
Although the term postpartum depression or maternal depression is often used, there are actually several symptoms and conditions that new mothers may experience. Maternal depression is more than what's often called the baby blues. Baby blues is a temporary state that usually occurs within a few days of a baby's birth and can last up to 2 weeks. Maternal depression is more severe, lasts longer, and can even be life-threatening.
The entire crop of current Hawk Foundation policy fellows are outstanding organizations doing outstanding work. For episode 108, we chose to focus on one in particular, Girls Empowerment Network. Let's hear from their new policy fellow, Vanessa Beltran.
Black and Latinx girls are ready to lead. They have the aspiration and capacity, but they often don't get the support that they need from their school or school systems because of gender and racial biases that really lead to deficit-based thinking, and it hinders girls from reaching their full potential. And so in preparing this advocacy curriculum, we really see it as a framework for building self-efficacy because we're able to pull together all of the six C's, confidence, communication, collaboration, creativity, critical thinking, and coping skills, and actually put them into practice.
During the pandemic, our awesome policy fellows have only needed to be more awesome. I thought I'd wrap this up with our previous episode, 126, and another Hog Policy Fellow, Carl Hunter, on the struggle against vaccine inequity for those involved in the criminal justice system.
What I learned about lived experience is that the voice, that it makes a difference at the table because you begin to understand the plight of those who are the least of these. You know, again, going back to that quote, you know, how do you get those who are least impacted, which would probably be those people around the table, to be just as morally outraged as those who are, without that voice in the table? Yeah. Taking them to that point would be folly.
So if there is something you want to know about mental health policy in Texas and beyond, chances are we've covered it here. So please indulge yourself. Go through our catalog. Find something that speaks to your passion and curiosity. I've also included links to all of the episodes mentioned in the show description. Now finally, one last shameless plug. Our one-of-a-kind guide to the Texas mental health system, A Guide to Mental Health Systems and Services in Texas, will always be available on our website. If you go to the policy engagement section of our main website, hog.utexas.edu, you can find both the web version as well as a PDF. If you truly care about mental health policy and the vast and complex array of agencies, rules, and institutions that oversee mental health in our state, you should absolutely check it out. And that does it for this episode. We're glad that you could join us. Production assistance by Kate Rooney and Anna Harris. Thanks as always to the Hawk Foundation for Mental Health for its support. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to be there for others, it's just as true. By helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please leave us a review and subscribe to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, TuneIn, or Spotify, among others. Thanks for joining us.